Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Benas Podcast. And today's guest is my good old friend, Noel Mikhalian, who I know when he was still very young. And now he's grown pretty big and tall and would probably beat me up in a heartbeat. He's an Armenian-German boxer who grew up in Germany, but currently resides in Miami, Florida. We talked about his boxing career, about the boxer's mindset, about how to build a career, how to prepare physically and mentally, and a lot of interesting stories from his path, from stepping into the ring, from what he does to recover afterwards. We talked about sleep. The Aura Ring was a topic. So lots of insightful messages from Noel. Please listen in. Please subscribe to this channel. If you liked what you heard, if you didn't like what you hear, you don't have to subscribe. I enjoy doing this, and I hope you enjoy listening to it. And please share. Leave a comment, and see you next time. Bye. All right, Noel, welcome to my podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're the first non-basketball guest on my podcast. Congratulations. you're a winner.
It's a big honor. It's a big honor. After all the tall people, you have a smaller one.
Well, you're actually pretty tall for a boxer, as I understand.
Yeah. What, well, I'm 6'3", but I'm not a giant like you are. Like, sort of a basketball player. So.
Well, compared to other basketball players, I'm not a giant. I'm pretty probably a little bit below average. Probably average, maybe 6'4", 6'5" is probably average.
Yeah.
So we know each other. I mean, it's a strange story that our background goes back to, and we had like a nice little chat in German here before we got on, because we know each other from Germany. We've met when you were how old were you? I think it was like maybe 2006. You were 16, maybe 16, 15.
No, I think it's longer. I think the first time I saw you playing basketball at Cuxhaven when you were playing and your father was coaching the team, I think I was like, must have been 2006 or something.
Yeah, 2006. So you, how old were
16,
you?
16. Yeah. I think I was like 16. Yeah.
Yeah, 16, 17, something like it does, because I finished playing 2007, so it must have been 2006 when you were coming with Corin to the game. Yeah. And your brother too, right? Your brother was coming also.
Yeah, my brother and my mother. And I remember you didn't play for so long because I think you got injured then.
Yep.
And we kept coming to the games, but you were coaching with your dad and already the team. And it was always nice to see you playing and like the team and like basketball. That's the first time I was actually at a basketball game, and I got excited for it. And I love to watch it because it's so fast.
It's a very dynamic sport compared to boxing. But I do remember that actually one of the first, because I had long injury history, and one of the first therapists that helped me to get rid of some of my pain, and not all of it, but some of my pain, was Rado Minkov from Braunschweig. I don't know if you remember him, but he was training Corin in Braunschweig at some times.
Oh yeah. I remember him. He had his wellness fitness studio.
He was helping
Corin also out with nutrition and like training and less injuries. I remember that. Yeah, that's a long time ago.
So you have deep Armenian roots. You were born in Armenia, correct?
Yeah, exactly. Well, born in Armenia, and my parents immigrated to Germany when I was four, in 1994. But my father's mother is a pure German, and my mother's mother is pure Greek. So I'm kind of a little bit mixed. That's why we moved to Germany, because my grandmother is German, and she took the whole family after the war breakout between Armenia and Azerbaijan back in the days.
Yeah.
And so we moved to Germany because she is actually a German.
Interesting. I didn't know that. So what? How well connected are you still to Armenia? Do you still have a lot of connections? Do you still travel back to Armenia to some point when you have a chance? Or like, yeah. I moved also from Lithuania when I was 6 years old, and I come back and forth a lot, and I'm currently here. But it's you know, like, you always have, no matter how early you left, you still have a deep connection with your roots. So how close are you still with Armenia?
I'm still very close, although I didn't travel for a long time to Armenia because of many reasons. And with Armenians, it's good because they're spread all around the world because of the genocide that happened in 1915 when the Turkish killed 1.5 Armenians. Many flew in different countries all over the world. So we have a big diaspora everywhere. So you meet everywhere on earth an Armenian. So you get connected and you always share the mentality and the same like heritage. So you are kind of connected everywhere you are on world with Armenians. And also if you're raised by Armenian parents who like identify themselves as Armenian, you eat Armenian food. And you, same like with you, you probably ate the Lithuanian food. Shows at home, probably play basketball, which Lithuanian people love to play basketball, right? Same with boxing and with Armenians. Like it's an Armenian sport. Like Armenians always send their children to either it's boxing, weightlifting, chess, or wrestling.
Wrestling,
So yeah, I'm still very well connected to Armenians. Even if I got even more connected in the States, because now in the States there are many more. Like in the States and Russia, there is the biggest Armenian community. In Los Angeles, there were like 1.5 million Armenians living there, more than in Armenia itself. Wow. So it's kind of better for an Armenian in the States to be connected to Armenians here than in Armenia or Europe.
So tell me, how did you end up going to Florida? Is it in Miami? I forget. Is it close to like
I live in Miami.
So how did you end up? How did you end up there now? Because you were like you were for a long time. I know you were in Germany in Hamburg, and we saw each other there as well for one period. But then I saw you before. I think it was during the pandemic or before the pandemic that you all of a sudden I saw you in pictures popping up of you in Miami. How did how did that happen?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Right in front of the pandemic in February, like almost 2 years ago, I moved to Miami. And the pandemic happened and lockdown happened. And in the first 3 months, I was just in my apartment alone. It was like really strange. I just moved in this country and I couldn't go nowhere. Everything was closed. And till then, I remained here. But I was traveling already back and forth for 2 years to Florida and Germany, Florida, back and forth because of training reasons. Because my coach was here, Pedro Diaz, a very famous Cuban coach. I started training with him here, so I came and spent always like 2-3 months for training camps here, and then I figured out, oh, I like to stay here, so I immigrated to Miami and remained here.
And that's all she wrote. You're ever since you're this Miami resident now.
Well, I stayed also a few months in LA for the training camp, but I didn't like it that much there. And I traveled a few other big cities in the States, but for not only for boxing, for if you work out every day, it's nice if you just wake up and you see the sunshine and you just pull up some shorts and shirt and you go for a run and everybody's so, the fitness industry is so big in Miami. It's like everybody has something to do with it. Also, my girlfriend is in the fitness industry and like, it's good to for networking and training and like also in general for your mood.
That's a good segue we can go into the training aspect in terms of like how the cultural aspect, first of all, because that's what's one thing we talked about before we started to record, is the American mentality and culture focused on sports and focused on open to new people. It's a very open culture in terms of like communication, like you said, networking with like not necessarily with a mindset of like making business, but it's of a mindset of learning something and learning from each other and learning how to train or learning, picking up new nutritional habits. So tell me how was that encountering a new culture and coming to the States and then experiencing this, like you said, like outside training, weather, different mood, everybody's like probably overdosing on vitamin D all the time.
I feel like everybody's like kind of high here because every time you go out, people have so much energy and they like love to like network. Like you'll be walking down the street and somebody will just like start talking to you or compliment you on something, like which is very different to Germany, right?
Yeah.
Which I remember people are not that open-minded to just do like network, then they would say, okay, people in the States are a little bit more superficial, but like, you know, you have everywhere advantages and disadvantages. It depends on what you like. But in terms of networking and training, and it's very easy to make connections here because everybody is so open-minded for something new and new people. It doesn't matter where you come from because everybody is kind of an immigrant here in the States. So it's people are very open-minded. And in terms of training, you learn every day something new here because something pops up here every day. it's a new method of squatting, a new method of even the basics, you know what I mean? Sometimes I even get tired of like, it's a squat. What do you want to change in a squat?
The angle here, just a little bit. Yeah, but it's the country of innovation. I mean, there's so much innovation, and like we talked about the TRX as well. I brought the TRX because I saw it through the States, and I brought it. I was training with the TRX in Germany in Cuxhaven already in 2005 when I was playing, and nobody has seen it before. And then somebody like this one lady opened up a TRX studio, which was like, it was far advanced for everybody. Nobody really knew what it was happening. So the business picks up slowly. Everything comes up late to Europe, but you're right in the epicenter of training and of developing, like building a career and having some sort of foundation to continue your career. But I wanted to go back and ask you, I know that your stepfather was influential in you becoming a boxer because you were grown up with your younger brother. You were always watching him, obviously. But how do you go about building a career? Like for me, the career of a boxer is something that I have a hard time fathoming. Like it's there's so much. The fine line of like where, which fight to take, which fight not to take, where, when are you ready to go professional to get the first fight, and how important are the first fights to continue to build your career? So tell me a little bit from your experience, from the career, your career, from your stepfather's career. Maybe you saw something that you took away from that, and how to approach a boxer's career.
Well, when I was growing up, basically it was an advantage to see and like be live in the career of my stepfather, who was a world-class professional boxer. So I picked up many things from him, and also all the business. Boxing was so big back in the day in Germany. So you had many good professional athletes there, like Universal Boxing Promotion, the first one. The gym was like right behind my next to my school, and I would go there and watch all these champions training. And I would, since a kid, I would always save like who is doing something right, who is succeeding, and who is not succeeding. So I saved kind of in the back of my mind how to train, how to behave, how to be like the management part. What do you need to like succeed in the boxing business? Because boxing business is a very, it's not only a sport, it's also a business. And I had the advantage, as I said, to pick up the mistakes of my stepfather, but also his hardworking mentality and like kind of pick what it's which will help me on my way to succeed. And then I decided to make a career out of it when I was actually in law school in Hamburg. And after university, I would go to do sparring partner with some world-class fighters like Alexander Alexeyev or Ola Afolabi, which were competing for world titles. And I was doing good. And then I got my first professional contract and did like the first fights for like little money, just like that, to put it in my pocket. But as soon as it got better and people thought I'm like highly talented and like a good prospect, I started to make more money. And so I focused only on boxing, and I wanted to make a good career out of it since I was young. And I dropped the studying and I was competing. I had my first TV fight after my fifth fight, which would then give me much attention. And I was like, oh, this could go somewhere. And my first manager, and like was my circle around me, told me like, you could be at least the European or world champion. So keep going, keep training. So I loved to train. I loved sports and I loved boxing. So I made a career out of it.
Is there something that you say that like made a difference in your first fights? Like, obviously winning is key to win the first fights, but is there something that you would say in your training resume that you feel like was like very crucial for improving your fights and the quality of your opponents to further your career?
The thing is, when you're younger in boxing, you like try to observe and like see what is your circle like recommending, your management, your promoter, your trainer, like what do they see? You think other people see you better. So you try to get the experience in fights. Mm-hmm. And it's all about winning, of course. And when you're younger, you work harder and you're like a little bit more naive, but you work harder because you have the will, but you don't have the experience, which could be dangerous. When I think back to those beginning years, I was just focused on the fights to keep on winning. And because I knew if I just like continue, you know, sometimes you have a bad day, sometimes you're a good day. It's also with fights, you have a bad fight, you have a good fight. But if you be consistent with winning, you will get the experience and will make ways. And if I like look back now on my career, I gained so much knowledge training with so many different people and like through my fights, fighting all over the world. And I think now as I gained the experience is more valuable than being young and hungry and just like fighting and, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but then you have to be reflective on the experience. So you have to have also some insightfulness from your own self, but also the people around you, you have to be able to trust them. So how many people, because like you said, you're green behind the ears, like you're really like you're just trying to observe and you're eager to win, eager to fight, but you also have to have this self-discipline and courage to trust the people around you. So as you're talking now, I was wondering how many people were there around in your ear that gave advice to you. And that you really like you had to put everything on the shelves in order to conceptualize what they were saying.
Well, I had many people around me like giving me advice, and I have trained with many trainers, but I was kind of always filtering out what is good for me and what is not that good for me. And I kept my like inner circle very, very small. It was basically only my brother and my stepfather, my mother. Mm-hmm. And at one point it was only my brother because I felt like he would understand me from the side better than any other because he knows boxing. He watched my stepfather's career too, and he was an active professional too, and he was like always a better fighter actually. So I had him always on my right side to give me kind of a reflective view on myself. And then I was always like filtering out, like, how can I succeed? What are my strengths? What are my weaknesses? How can I like, you know, boxing is a complex sport. Like you can be one fighter is a very physically strong fighter, so he might have much power. The other fighter has good footwork. The other one is very fast, and then there's the one who is like very skillful and very smart, and then you have the one who's the pressure fighter. So that mixed up, you can't just succeed because you're a power puncher, for example, or you're just fast. So you have to figure out, oh, maybe I have a weak chin. So it's kind of like chess. So you have to figure out, okay, how you can make the way up and with all those opponents and succeed.
Navigate through different opponents with different techniques and different tactics.
Yeah. So I was always working on like everything. I was working on my footwork. I was working on my power. I was working on my defense because for example, for me, it was always important to have good defense. Although I'm a power puncher, but I'm a better defense fighter now because it was always important to me not to get hit. Like there's so many fighters, and so they get punchy, and like I don't get health issues or something. I don't need that. I just want to like be champion and like go out of the sport with the same health I came in. So I always was like training on defensive skills and like not getting hit and not being only a clown for the audience to just run into punches or something like that. Because at the end of the day, for me, it was always about winning.
So now when you're, because I listen a lot to Joe Rogan, it's not a secret for people who know me, I listen a lot to Joe Rogan, and he's probably one of the reasons why I'm doing this as well, because I feel like there's a lot of knowledge to be gained from different sports and different people in general, just that you when you encounter them. And he was talking also about Floyd Mayweather, because Floyd Mayweather is one of those guys, and I don't know, I might sound like a moron in this podcast because of the questions I ask, so I apologize because I don't. But in general, from what he was saying is that Floyd Mayweather is the best technical, as if I'm misphrasing, I apologize, but technical boxer who does not get hit or gets hit the least. He's a very good defensive fighter. Is that somebody you were watching as well because of that knowledge of how he navigates?
Definitely. Like, you might like or dislike him because of his like character outside of the ring, or how he is. Like, many people criticize him, like how he's outside of the ring, but inside of the ring, like he is an artist. Like, he is like his fights. I mean, it's like he's painting he's painting. You know what I mean? Like, he's like Picasso in the ring. He's really. How can I describe it? Like, yeah, he's an artist, and boxing is also kind of an art. And look at him, as you said, he was defensive so good, and he mastered all these like shoulder rolls and defensive skills. So he didn't really get hit. So he lasted in the sport how many years? I don't know. I watched Floyd Mayweather. I was like first time 12 or 13. Now I'm 31, and Floyd Mayweather was still like active and still doing fights. So how long he lasted in the sport, and boxing is a dangerous sport, but
yeah, and still healthy. Like you said, like he's still healthy and fully knowledgeable of what's going on, and very, very well versed, as you when you hear him talk, and he does talk.
He talks a lot.
But let's get back a little bit on the sparring that you said you gained a lot of experience from, and I was wondering also. And our good friend, our common friend, Lee Jekka, who also said that that I was talking about of what, because he loves, actually, he's really into boxing. He was always very much, he was boxing himself, actually, when he was growing up. But he was also telling me, like, to ask, did you ever have the experience of boxing or sparring with your brother, against your brother? And what is, like, if it did get heated to a certain extent, or like, because there is a certain amount of, you know, still this, like, this competition with your brother, you know, like, even though, like, he's younger, but he's, like you said, he was a better boxer. But like, when you step on a ring and you are sparring and you see your brother in there, what's the feeling like? What's going on through both of your heads?
Well, as I remember, I sparred my brother since we were like probably 10 or 9 at home. We always like would be fighting around, watching Van Damme movies and like Dragon Ball or something, and then just competing against each other in the living room, you know. But then we
with gloves.
But you know, the snow gloves. and then when we got a little bit older, like in teenage age, I started boxing first. I was doing Taekwondo, and then he joined Taekwondo too, and then we switched from Taekwondo to boxing. And then all of a sudden, he was like the more talented one. He was a southpaw, and he was like picking up everything so quick. Like, I had to train long time to pick something up. He was just watching like a fight or playing boxing on PlayStation on a console, and then he was doing that in training. Like, how can he do that? He was so talented. At one point, as a teenager, I even gave up. I was like, I just do boxing for like fitness and so on. I can be that good like him. And then when I was like in my late teens, I became like stronger and like for professional boxing, like physically mature. And then he was also like making a career out of professional boxing, but on a lighter division. And we always sparred and trained with each other. But when I was like grown up, I always like tried to be nice and easy on him, but he would always punish me. Like, I don't remember the sparring session which went well, because he would start touching me for real. And at one point, when I needed him as a sparring partner, because I was fighting a southpaw in 2017 in Berlin, and then he was there. I said, "Abel, can you help me out with sparring?" He was like, "Yeah, of course, but just light, okay?" And then he was like throwing all these bombs on me, and I was like, just take them, be easy. It's like, my head was hurting. I was like, that's a bother. Just take those punches and go. Don't get heated in this. he, like, it's his nature. Like, he steps in the ring, he is also like this his performance, he just punishes you. Like, he's a very good technician. And then if he sees it's open, bam, you get a punch from here, there, and then.
But he stopped completely. He's now just doing studying no. law, or why?
No,
why
he, did he? Yeah, he is working as a attorney for H&M Cost Group in the labor law office. He is doing labor law.
He didn't want to fight.
Well, he wanted to, but we had like some, you know, boxing is also related, especially in Germany, very much into the street. And they were like with the promotion, I was in Sauerland promotion, and the guys we were training with, there were many incidents which also made my move to the States, which when I decided I will move from there 100%, because I don't see no career in Germany anymore, because the boxing business kind of ruined there because of people who are so long in the business. They're kind of like, I say, burned out in the boxing industry. And then, My brother was, he did like 13 fights and he won all of them. And he was also promised a contract with Sauerland. He beat actually a Sauerland fighter, but then nothing came in terms of like a future perspective as a professional fighter with Sauerland. So he decided he just keep studying
on.
And he did
move on. Yeah. That's sometimes it's unfortunate how like just fate decides your future. Like you can't control certain things. Like, I mean, like those kind of things, if he would have grown up in the States, for example, as we talked about, like the sports mentality, the culture of pushing, promoting, not necessarily promoting, but helping to help to like athletes that are eager to fight, even if they're not talented, either any athlete, baseball player, football player. The culture in the U.S., it's made for thriving, to be successful. Yep. And those kind of talents would not be lost, you know? Like that's definitely not. That's the difference. That's the biggest
people
difference.
People here in my gym are asking me, when is your brother coming? Like, he's not fighting. Like, maybe we can get him a few fights. I was like, and in Germany, it's like you have to bag people. Like, the industry is so burned out. Like, I sometimes see fighters fighting, they're just for fame. Like, they would even fight without, like, for nothing, just to get the attention there that they are in a professional ring and like having a professional match. So it kind of changed when I was growing up. As you remember, there were like big shows in Germany. The fighters would get paid well. They had good TV contracts, and you had it wasn't in basketball too. You have to go to the games in suit, and like, you know, like it was certain behavior. Yep. You couldn't act out or something like that, right? And now the boxing industry in Germany kind of changed and went down to, I don't know. In German, we say Milieu.
Milieu, yeah. St. Pauli.
And that's why I moved here, because I'm like, I see myself as a world-class athlete, and I'm also ranked as a world-class athlete. And if I would start here, I would like had a better way probably than there.
But yeah, but
you learn by.
Yeah, I mean, that's how the cookie crumbles. I mean, it's like we said, like it's a way of where you were born, where you grow up, and then that's how the cookie crumbles. We have to make the best of the situation we're in.
Exactly.
But I wanted to go to talk a little bit about preparation for fights, because I was looking at the dates of your fights, and like more or less, like earlier, maybe there was more fights during the year, but I see five, but sometimes it's more like three or four fights a year, more or less, right? Is that even less?
And well, last time I fought, for example, in December, it was also COVID and here and there, which is like these 2 years were very difficult to get fights. And in my division, the cruiserweight division, it's one below heavyweight, it's not that well promoted and marketed. So it's a little bit more difficult to schedule fights and get fights than in other divisions, like the lightweight division, because there's so many fighters and like, there's always something going on. There are also the louder fighters in the lightweight divisions, like, I don't know, smaller guys are just louder.
Yeah. You
know? So it was kind of difficult to schedule fights. And what was your question with the training?
Yeah, what's the preparation period for those fights? Because you have like, okay, let's say two or three fights a year, but like you see, you got a fight scheduled through your promotion agency, through your promoter. What's the preparation period? How far advanced do you have to know in order to prepare for a fight? And then as you are preparing, what's the regimen you go through in the process of training? How many times a day? How many off days do you get? What's the regime there for that period?
Well, it always depends on the fighter. But for me personally, at this point, because I train all over the year, even though if I'm not fighting, I every day in the gym and training, I'm staying at my, because I have to stay in my shape. I take off 2 weeks and then I get crazy because I need to train. Like it's kind of my habit because I was training and doing fitness and everything since I'm a kid. So I kind of have always to train. But if I have a date for a fight, I need maximum 6 weeks for the concentrated training camp for that specific fight, and it's enough. And I start basically the first 2 weeks with strength training, running, conditioning, and some mitts, back training, and then the last 4 weeks it's usually the sparring, mitts only, like boxing, the techniques, tactics,
mitts, strategies. Mitts, what is mitts?
The how do you call it? In German is the Katzen.
I don't know.
the mitts, you know somebody holding the mitts and somebody's punching in your hands.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Or pads. They have something pads. Words for that.
I didn't know
German,
the word.
They say Katzen. Such a strange word. Yeah, the mitts and 4 weeks of sparring, sometimes 3 weeks. The last week in front of, before a fight, you do the weight cut. If you have to do one as a heavyweight, you don't have to do one, but as a cruiserweight, I always have to like cut weight, and for recovery, mm-hmm. that's basically a training camp.
How long is the recovery after the fight?
Usually 2 weeks, depends on what kind of fight. In the beginning of the careers, if you fight 4 rounders, 6 rounders, and sometimes even 8 rounders, you can take off like 5 days to a week if you didn't take no damage in the fight. But usually 2 weeks, you're good to go. But if you had like a world title fight and you got 12 rounds like beat up, you should take off like at least 1-2 months.
But you cannot, do you take off completely? Like after let's say a 12 bout fight that was like, it was difficult. Do you take off 12 weeks completely, 10 to 12 weeks, let's say, or do you slowly wind down to calm your body down with still doing some cardio work just to let.
Usually at least 1 week I don't do nothing, just eating and relaxing and so. But then always my I want to train and move. I start to do like, with me it's always like I start with weights. I start with weights and I like running, and then I go like through the different parts of training camp again.
What's the supplementation and nutrition process? Like how many, what supplements do you take and what nutrition do you how many like calories per day do you have to have? Do you have a nutritionist that helps you out with this?
Yeah, I worked with many nutritionists during my career, and usually I don't even need no diet plan or nothing, because I fight at 200 pounds and I'm walking around like 215. It's 15 pounds. I lose that in the last week, sweating it out. Mm-hmm. And, boxing is, you need much energy, so you have to eat a lot of carbs. Mm-hmm. It depends on your body style. But for me, especially, I need a lot of carbs and a lot of proteins. So I eat usually always healthy, like it's like 3-4 times a day. Like I start with oatmeal, coffee in the morning, some fruits, and then at noon I get some rice with chicken. Today I got rice, chicken curry, something like that. And then in between, like protein bars, shakes after a workout, protein shake. And I take BCAAs and aminos and zinc, vitamin C a lot. And that's basically it. You're like, as a boxer, you don't need that much supplements, because at one point I was doing like everything, even taking like creatine and like all these muscle growth things. I got so bulky and heavy I couldn't even move.
that's the benefits of understanding and learning your own body and knowing what it needs, what it doesn't need. I also heard that fish oil is good for the brain, for just in terms of, again, to go back to the sparring part. And that's another thing that I just recently heard today on one of the Joe Rogan's podcast episodes, that they said that there's, but it, that was directed towards MMA fighters, that they suffer 10 times more concussion and brain damage in sparring and training than they do in a fight. Is that something that you heard in boxing as well?
Definitely. That's why so many injuries and fight happens, because that's also a reason why I hate sparring and hate to do sparring a lot. Like everybody in the gym, my coach is also sometimes asking me, you want to spar this guy, or just like for the timing, just move around and something. I'm like, always no. If I don't have a fight scheduled, I don't spar. Because if I get now injured and then I can't prepare for my camp, like who will pay me, you know, for my fight? So you have to always like take care of yourself. And the sparrings are hard. Like sometimes you spar like 3 guys in one sparring session and they come all fresh. Like you do like 12 rounds, every 4 rounds, they switch a guy, or you spar one guy and then the next round another guy. And they keep resting and you are like, you know, sparring. You get hit so much. Like I remember one time I was sparring so hard. It was in the heat here in Miami. It's also so humid. I couldn't eat afterwards. I was like, I was so dehydrated. I had like, was almost in a coma. And the sparring sessions were way harder for me than any fight I ever had. So you have to be very careful with the sparring, because sparring is necessary, of course, but so many guys take it so hard on sparring here and there. They're often already also burned out for the fight. So, you know, sparring should be like a climb stone. Like you should like prepare you for the fight. It shouldn't take actual energy from you which you could use for the fight, right?
Unless you happen to step into the ring with Abel for sparring, and then Abel would kick your ass. So there's a fine line to with sparring and training, and not to overtrain yourself and not to overdamage yourself. So it depends. Again, you have to have trustworthy people around you to guide you through these.
Definitely. When I was younger, I remember, like in Germany with Korn, we would spar so much, like 4 times a week for it, like 4 weeks and 4 sparring sessions a week. So that means Monday, Tuesday sparring, Wednesday is just running or cardio, and Thursday, Friday again sparring, and like with different partners. And it was so much sparring. I often before the fight, I got always like sick or had fever or was underweight, and I was like, I start camp, I was always good, but then I kind of lose my energy. And then I figured out, hey, you got to keep it, like more is not necessarily more. So you got to take care of yourself. And now I'm at this point, I learned, oh, you don't have to spar that much. And I also observed so many fighters, they're like sparring world champions. They kick everybody's ass in sparring, but when it comes to a fight, they can't perform anymore. So I kind of have now the different, like the opposite mentality. So in sparring, I just take it. I suck all the, like what I can learn in sparring. I just let people just like hit me, and I work on my defense. So nothing can like shook me in the fight. So I work on my defense. And then when I get into a fight, I start like punching and like I'm focused. Okay, you know, this is 45 minutes on the stage. You have to perform. You have to be focused, and there's a dangerous opponent. So, you know, you got to have to feel the danger to be on your toes. And that's how I think about it.
It's a smart way of doing things and learning to move better on defense and prepare yourself for the fight in a proper way of the way you want to fight the fight. So less is more, like you said. And so let's talk about let's do this and show the aura ring.
Yeah. And my girlfriend gifted me this one for my birthday. I didn't even know that such thing exists.
There is a couple. There's a whoop strap that also measures, but it's more for training. It's subscription based, and Aura Ring.
Yeah, I know that's like a strap, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
as a ring, I didn't know that it exists as a ring. Like as a strap, I saw it. I mean, you know, the Polars also we use for the training. On your body.
So what do you, how do you, obviously we know how we monitor the sleep, but how many times do you sleep? How you take a nap as you also told me before this podcast, but how much emphasis do you put on sleep during your training regime?
Yeah, I that's why I got this ring, because I'm a bad sleeper, and my girlfriend found this ring, and she was like, you have to track your sleep, because I train so hard, and when I recovered, I have so much energy. But then when I start camp, and yesterday I did 2 sessions a day, now I'm already preparing for a fight, so I also train twice a day sometimes.
Yeah,
depends on the session. So and I sweat a lot. I'm one of these guys who sweat liters of water, who have to drink water with just salt in it, and just to hydrate. And at the end of the week, or in the middle of the week, I get so tired and weak, even though I drink so much water. And so probably something was wrong with my sleeping. I thought I'm sleeping long, 10 hours or so, but I'm not sleeping. I'm just lying in bed.
Yeah.
And now, as I have this ring, I can track my sleeping. And now I figured out, oh, you're 8 hours in bed, but you just slept 5 hours.
Yeah.
That's so little. The whole week, last week, I was training every day, but every day I had only 5 hours of sleep. And then on the weekend, I had finally twice, Saturday and Sunday, I slept till I wake up without alarm. And that helps me now to track my sleep to recover, because recovery is 80% of the training camp, or even more. It's more important maybe than the training.
Yeah. Right? Do you get enough deep and REM sleep?
Actually, yesterday I didn't have it. I had only 1 hour REM sleep, and the deep sleep was 1.5 hour, and only 5 hours of sleep. And I tried to improve. Yesterday I went to bed at 10. I slept at 11:30 or something, and I'm waking up at 6 because I have my first session at 6:45.
Yeah.
And was a little lack of sleep, but I wake up in the night many times because I drink so much water now. I started now to I'm trying now to get 2 gallons of water every day in my body. Mm-hmm. And as you know, if you drink so much, you're just running. The one half of a day you are drinking, the other half you are running to the toilet. Yeah, so I had to pee so many times in the night. But yeah, now I know that I have lack of sleep, and I'm trying to improve on that.
Yeah, this, the one thing I noticed is that the earlier, the most important part of the sleep, and that's what also the sleep doctors in general talk about, mm-hmm. that the first part of the night or the evening is when the most important part is when you go to sleep at 10, like you said, the 10, mm-hmm. 10 between 10 and 2 o'clock in the morning is the most important part of the sleep, because afterwards it's much more difficult to get the deep and the REM sleep. So mm-hmm. I noticed that as well. The earlier you go to bed, the fresher I am in the morning, and I can wake up at 6-7 o'clock, no problem. But then if I, even the same amount of sleep, let's say from 10 till 6 is 8 hours, it's different than from 12 till 8, because the quality, I wake up in a completely different quality of sometimes with a headache, just because I want to sleep a little bit late, and despite the same amount of hours, it still makes a difference. So
it depends probably also on yourself, when you have your deepest sleep. Some people have in the morning their deepest sleep, and then some people have but I read also on this in the booklet of this, they say, as you said, it's the best to have your sleep from midnight to 3 or something. That's the best time to have your deep sleep. If you can work on that. I'm trying now. But why did you get the ring? You have sleeping problems too, or?
No, I'm a health fanatic, but I got it just because I found it interesting to track my sleep, and just sometimes I look at it to track and to see how I slept at last night, what time I fell asleep, what time I woke up, because it tells you also when you wake up and what hours. And I feel that's what, I know, like I said, I was noticing that the earlier I went to sleep, the better quality of sleep I got at the middle of the night, like you said, from in the 11, 12, 1 o'clock, that's when you, I'm flat out sleep. And then I wake up and I notice the difference. So it also depends if you eat too much at night, if you go to bed with a full stomach, and then you see that the sleep was completely shitted at that night.
What is your sleep an average? How long do you sleep on average?
More 8 hours. I try.
That's good.
Yeah. I put emphasis on that. It's very, because I also, people the people that are experts in that, they say that naps are very important, especially for athletes. Mm. You have to nap. Yeah. And And old school people, old school athletes, they always napped, and then they still carry on after they finish their careers. Their bodies are used to napping, and they do it. And in general, it just like it gives you sometimes like this power nap is real. Like you get like a 20 minute power nap. If I'm tired and I feel like my body needs it, it's enough to jolt me awake again, and then afterwards I have enough energy. So I listen to my body. I observe my body, just because of also, like I said earlier, I had injuries. I had too many injuries in my past. And through the injuries, through the rehabs, I learned my body. I learned to listen to my body. I learned to understand my body better. And people make fun of me because they never had injuries. They don't understand. But once you learn to read your body, you learn also how to treat your body. And then you all of a sudden you feel better, you have a better quality of life that way. Other people are lucky and they don't care, they didn't have those injuries and they can walk through life pain free. So
when I was younger, also I never napped. There was a thing my stepfather, my former coach, always like, go nap after the first training session. I couldn't. I had so much energy, and I was like, no. If I nap, I want to sleep longer. And then when I wake up, I'm disappointed because I can't sleep anymore and have to train. So I didn't nap, but now I'm like, no, it's good to have like 20, 30 minutes. It makes you sharper, and your focus is back. And if you are often sore, you are fresher after a nap. And
exactly.
But what I say, 8 hours is good for somebody who drinks so much coffee like you. I see you all the time at the coffee shops on Instagram.
but this is another key. You will never see me drink coffee. Very rarely you will see me drink coffee past 3 o'clock, 3, 4, maybe 4 o'clock, because it's not necessarily that it keeps me from falling asleep. I fall asleep even if I would drink a coffee, let's say an espresso shot after dinner sometimes. Sometimes when you're on the road, I try to avoid it, but sometimes you just like, I'll still fall asleep. But the quality of sleep is not as good, because the caffeine keeps you from going into the deep, the deep sleep. Because you can see an aura ring. Whenever I drink coffee at night, I still sleep the same amount of hours, but I don't get enough of, that's a deep sleep. I think it was deep sleep. So that's the biggest difference. So I try to eliminate the caffeine in the second half of the day. After lunch, I try not to drink any coffee anymore, and I just drink tea or just water or whatever. And then that way, it's a much, much better way of quality of sleep.
That's what I do too, because I love coffee. I try to avoid it, and I try to stop, just wake up and just drink water. So drinking water. My girlfriend, for example, she always wakes up, she gets her water with her lime, and that's her in the morning drink. But I drink so much coffee now, I got too into coffee too. Now she got used to it too, and she loves also now the coffee smell in the morning. I would like to drink it through the whole day, but now I also like... I have only one coffee in the morning before workout, 6 a.m. And when I was younger, I drank so much caffeine, and I still could sleep at night. But now it's different.
Go ahead.
You track your activity too, or only the sleep? I even did mitts today and heavy back workout, and I have the ring on, and then I see my heart rate on in the training session, and it doesn't break.
This is a great infomercial for Aura. I will send this to Aura. I will
advertise.
Sponsor
this. This podcast.
for sure. Another thing I wanted to go back into fighting and preparation for a fight, to talk about fight night. So fight night, I was always curious, when fight night is there, and you wake up in the morning on the day of the fight, what are some things you have to go through in your mind? What's the mindset? What's the preparation process leading up to the fight? What are some do's and some don'ts for you on fight night?
Well, on fight night, I'm already a little bit relaxed. And because I'm very focused, and you had the whole preparation is behind you. You know, the preparation is so much suffering, I don't like it. It's so much training, the sparring part, and getting punched and here and there, cutting weight. And then at fight night, after the weigh-in, you are like, first you do the weight cut and then you are like so happy to eat. So the first satisfaction, you don't even think about the fight. You're like, oh, I will eat everything and drink whatever I want till the fight, because it was so hard to cut the weight. And then you really appreciate like just a sip of Coca-Cola or something like, for you. So you don't even think about the fight. And then you go to sleep. Usually I don't get that much of a good sleep because I'm already thinking about the fight next day and what I will do and what can I do and like plan things. But usually you always do it from subconscious. But it's like because you're so excited. At fight day, I usually don't talk to no one. Like really, I'm just like so focused. Just like I want to get the fight behind me. And I have my game face on and I'm like completely into okay, I have to perform. This training camp was not for just for fun. So it's like the training camp is worth nothing if you don't perform. So that's the most important part of being a boxer is the fight. So I'm completely in my space and I'm like kind of like shut down from everything and my own mind, and I don't think about nothing and just the fight and so focused.
But is there something like something somebody did on fight night? I'm just trying to see if there's something to take away to learn for other boxers, for other professionals in other sports that somebody did to take your focus away. Was there something that happened in the past that where you were like, man, like I like just leave me alone? Or is there something that you would suggest to avoid for other trainers, other people, or whoever is dealing with professional athletes?
Well, you are at fight night, you're in a hotel, there's so many people around you, so many other fighters with their teams, fans, and you can get distracted so easily and be just like, oh, not on your game anymore because somebody criticized you or talked shit about you and you're like off. So you got to close your ears. You have to be in your inner self and like focus on the fight and put your game face on and don't care about anything else. Because in my past, I remember even my stepfather, for example, would talk shit about me or something in front of a fight and I would not care. I would think about it, oh shit, look, this is like distracting me. But I was like, I don't give a fuck. There is my goal. I want to succeed in this. That's my focus. I don't care about nothing. Game face on and in. So you have got to be careful. You got to be disciplined. You got to be just put on some music or something.
Yeah, some headphones.
Just go to the weigh-ins, to the restaurants for the food, and then back to your hotel room, lay down, rest, talk to no one, just your inner closest circle. That's it.
So one thing that I always wondering in other sports, and especially because I was dealing with a lot of video analysis, and I've watched so much basketball in my life, and my coach in college used to say that to us, and I will say that to other people, that I forgot more basketball than you will ever know. I will tell that to people at some point. I forgot more basketball than you will ever know, but. I'm not directing that to you, so I'm just saying what I will tell the other people. But in general, what's the video analysis like in boxing? Because and then there's one thing, one example I will give you afterwards that I saw. But in general, how much time do you put in? Is that once you know opponent, do you do that every day? Mm. Is that something that you focus on, that do put a lot of emphasis? That's certainly a building block, I can imagine, from the fight. But how much emphasis and what are the things that you look for in the video analysis?
Well, it's very important to see your opponent and figure out what he's doing, to develop also strategies and different game plans to succeed, right? So you got to know who you are fighting against. But usually for me, I don't like to watch boxing if I'm in a training camp. I don't want to hear nothing about boxing. I want to go to the gym, give my 100% and like smell it and train and like give my everything when I come home. And I don't want to hear anything about boxing. Like I don't even want to watch it. Just be like off it. So I usually trust my coaches to do the video analysis and then develop a game plan. I watch so much boxing that most of the time I know all my opponents and all other fighters because I watched them just like that when I was not in camp, because I watched so much boxing, you know. Mm-hmm. So most of the time you already know, like, for example, I'm fighting this guy 12th of December. I don't watch his fights now because I saw like 5-6 fights already, like 5-6 years ago from him. So now I trust my coaches. Like, look, what I already know his weaknesses. I tell my coaches, do the video analysis and then let me know in training, what do you think and what we should work to succeed? And usually my brother always does it for me. Like, I don't even have to watch anywhere. My brother watches them. And then, as I told you, he was learning boxing from watching videos. So he's like watching a guy and he knows everything. Well, you have to do this, that. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I go and I just do it, you know?
He's a visual learner. Like, that's the thing. That when you see certain things and it comes out you automatically once you start seeing the movements, I can imagine then the visualization is already there, and you start anticipating the moves that he will make. So because I was listening and seeing, or again, Joe Rogan, heck, I cannot go over that.
But he had to go. That's a great podcast. So.
Yeah, and he was showing this video of the Conor McGregor and Aldo fight that happened. Mm-hmm. And they were showing the green room preparation of McGregor, how he was doing the same move and he was anticipating how he will knock him out, because he knew the move that Aldo will do in the ring, and he was just preparing himself, just shadow boxing in that moment. And it was one-to-one the same way he knocked him out, with the way he was doing it in the green room and the shadow box. And that tells me it's like the amount of visualization and analysis that goes into it. You see like this combination coming at you, boom, 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 and that's what you're going to do, encounter. Is that really how you like the fighters prepare in general?
Definitely. Not for every opponent, but in this case, I guess he was warming up that punch, but he probably trained that punch 1,000 times in the gym, because he saw, oh, look, I'm a southpaw. I think he's a southpaw, right?
Yeah.
And from the left side, it's a good angle when he drops his right that I come with mine. So he probably trained that punch like 1,000 times. And then he was warming it up, and then like he had it already subconscious in him and had the timing to knock him out like that. And I remember that happened also with Manny Pacquiao against Juan Manuel Marquez. Marquez also, he said this one punch, he said, I'm like tired, like, of fighting this guy. Like, three times they fought, he just trained this one left overhand cross, and then with that cross he knocked Manny Pacquiao unconscious, like he was in sleep. So yeah, to land it looks like it's just one punch, you know, but this punch is probably trained in camp like 1,000 times.
Times
he was throwing that punch to get the timing.
They get the timing right and the strength right, just for that moment. And just, I mean, then you still have to land it.
Well, most of the time it's the timing, because like you don't need that much pressure to knock somebody out. It can be like 40-50 kilograms to knock somebody out, but it's most of the time it's the timing. Like, you have to have the timing, because if you even see a punch, it can hurt you, but it will hurt you. You will be like suffering from it, but you probably not get knocked out. But the punch with less power you didn't see has a higher chance to knock you out than the pressure punch. Because you don't see it. It's like a surprise, and it comes from, I don't know.
So during the fight, there's a lot of punches you have to dodge. A lot of the also, I'm sure, even though you're a defensive fighter, I'm sure you still have to take in a lot of punches into your stomach, into your body in general. Absorb,
sure.
Absorb. That's the word I'm looking for. Absorb. But and then if you feel. And you recently had a Bredis, the Latvian fighter.
Yeah.
And if you feel, I mean, it was as I watched some rounds, and I watched the fight itself. But if you feel the fight is getting away from you for whatever reason, if you feel like, if I don't know, like in individual sports, I can imagine there's also in tennis and other sports, it's much more a mental game. And I'm wondering, how do you like? And this fight you were supposed to win, I understand, because
I actually won also the fight. It was just a misjudgment, they say, but it was my management promotion who sold me out in that case. And like,
really?
yeah, even the press, ESPN, everybody wrote about it, that it's a robbery decision. Like that.
Yeah.
And I have all the media, everything I collected, my brother here and there. The commentators.
The commentators were saying that.
Noel won the fight. And Ray Flores, the ring announcer, went in the ring. He's like asking readers, we all thought Noel won. And like, how could that happen? That's also an aspect of boxing, which is the business part, which many times is very ugly for the audience and also for the sport, because not always the better guy and the winner gets crowned. It happened twice in my career because of reasons not inside of the ring, because of political reasons outside of the ring, which is in boxing very, very
common.
Is very, very unfortunate.
But yes.
Yeah, I had to feel it on my skin, and it's not that I don't want nobody to feel it.
Yeah, I could tell at the end of the fight how disappointed you were, because I mean it was general, like the anticipation, like you said, the commentators, listening to the commentators, they were all pro that you, like they were all anticipating the win. But my original question is like the negative self-talk that players do, the boxers, the fighters, every athlete has these moments. Yeah. Even coaches have these moments where it's like, man, like I'm not doing this good. I'm not doing this good. He's landing too many punches. Like, how do you avoid that? How much do you rely on your inner voice to calm you down? Do you rely on the support from the outside, from your corner? What's the thing that gets you out of the negative self-talk, because we all do it?
That's a good question, actually. In the fight, most of the time, when I'm out of the ring, I don't even remember how I was in the fight, because I'm so deep in myself to perform and to just do it that I don't even remember what I was thinking in that moment in the ring. And because I train so much to get all the movements in my subconscious mind and like my muscle memory, so I can do everything quick, because boxing happens in milliseconds. You have to be like, dup. You can't just plan something and then like be okay. Like I wait for this and that. It's like this. It's a quick sport too. And the negative talk, you know, when you fight someone, I remember, it's not always like it goes your way. Like you can throw a punch and you can miss, and then you will doubt yourself and you'll be like, oh shit, now I probably will lose this fight, or this will happen here and there. And I just like stop talking to myself in that moment. I'm just doing. It's the same for me. It's the same kind of when I'm so sore, so tired from training, that I think like I doubt myself and I feel so weak that I will, for example, not be champion or not win this fight because I'm so overtrained and tired. But I still go to work out, because I'm just like, you know, be consistent when you work out, go train, stop with that shit. That's just like for a few seconds, or like for a certain period of time, you will feel shitty. But for long term, you have to train. You have to train will make you better. It's the same with the negative self-talk. I'm just like, some moments I'm just like, just do it.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Just go through it and just
exactly
fight through it. Literally fight through it.
Yeah. Who was it? Wasn't it Winston Churchill or who said that when you are going through hell, keep going. So
yes.
A lot of times, sometimes in sparring, you get like punched so many times by guys who you would knock out in a fight, like who are not some better fighters than you, but you are so tired and you get punched and then you start doubting yourself. Sometimes you'll be like, oh shit, how couldn't I see that punch? But you're like switching sparring partners back and forth, who want to prove themselves. For you, it's just another day in the gym, another day in the office. But for some sparring partners, so it's like, I don't know, for them, my coach sometimes says it's for them, it's a Super Bowl. So they give everything, and you go home with a headache and you're like, oh shit, how could I get this punch from this guy? And then you doubt yourself and then you're like, oh shit, I don't feel good about this fight. But at the end of the day, I learned just keep doing it. And like stop talking to yourself and like put your game face on and just do it. Like you're going to work and just like get your routine in and don't be emotional.
In basketball, we say next play, because next play, mm-hmm. next possession. Don't win the next possession. Win the next possession. Yeah, because a lot of times And like players get used to, or like they miss a couple shots in a row, or they have a bad call by the referee, bad no call, they didn't get the foul call, and they're so hung up on the referee's decision not to call a foul that they are late to get back on defense, or there's so much more happening in the head than physically. And to get on with yourself from that moment, and like you said, like the play is over already. Like you have to move on. If you don't move on, there's gonna be one, two, three next plays, and you're still hung up on the last, like that happened like 2 minutes ago, you know. And basically, while you're in your head, you're out of it. The team is playing 5-on-4 because you are still mentally engaged with something else, and the team is missing you, you know. So there's a big relationship on that, and I think in that regard, and I think every athlete suffers from that as well, because there's always going to be a moment where there's going to be some negative impulse that you have to swallow and you have to move on.
Definitely, I remember one strength coach in Hamburg. He told me we were training, you know, these electric suits. Like you have
them. I saw that.
Yeah. I did that a few years ago, and then I did like something wrong, and he would like always tell me, champions never focus on mistakes. They just focus on going forward. It's like you do a mistake, okay, it happens. Just move forward. And it sticked in my mind, and I kind of like that quote, and I keep doing it like that. Also, as you mentioned, with this previous fight, I actually won that fight. It was a world title fight. Could change so many things in my career. I was so depressed afterwards, but then at the end of the day, I just keep going on, and now I also don't care. You know what I mean? It happens, but now I think, why should I like lean my emotions towards things I can't control? I can only control my performance. I performed, I won the fight. I can't do anything for politics and corruption in the sport.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly.
So, and I was also in that fight, I was very comfortable. In the hotel, I remember I had my game face on. I was like confident. Just, I got this. In the corner, my coach, you got this, easy. Just make this round and keep on distance. And I was like, oh, I won the fight. I was so disappointed because it happened earlier already against a good opponent, Poland, before. And I thought, I trusted my management back in the day again, because they said, oh, it's a world title fight in the World Boxing Super Series. Only the eight best competitors are competing. So that kind of catfished me a little bit in that. And then they sold me out live on TV, and many people got to know me through that fight, so I still got something out of it. But I became world champion through that fight, and many people would be probably suffer more from that, because imagine, like, I put all my youth in this sport, and like spent so many hours in the gym, not going out here and there. Like I studied in the gym all my whole youth, right? And then when it was a time to crown yourself, you're like, you don't see your mistake. The mistake is in somewhere else. But it is sometimes in life like that. You should just focus on things you can control. I can control those things. So I just move on, do what's best for me, for my career, and everything is fine.
Then, and that's the next thing I wanted to talk about, moving on after the fights. What you do, we talked about physical recovery, but what do you do mentally to recover, to get away from the fights afterwards? After, they said, like, the first 2 weeks usually you don't do anything. What do you do apart from not doing anything, apart from sleeping?
Tracking your sleep.
Tracking your sleep all day long. What do you do to calm your mind down, to get away, and to do something on a personal level, just to get your mind off of things?
Well, traveling was always a big part of my life before COVID. Like, since COVID, I didn't move. Like, I traveled in the States with my girlfriend all around, but not like outside of the country yet. But traveling was always a big part of my recovery, because I just love to go into different places, taste different cultures, do things outside of boxing, reading some good books, and spending quality time with friends, and especially with my brother. We used to travel also together, and that's what I usually do.
So what?
So that I go out partying or something like that. You know what I mean? I just get very, very calm in that sense. And I keep eating the same food that I'm eating also before. Like I love healthy food. I cheat every week, maybe for on a pizza, which is not even cheat food, like cheat meal for me, because I don't know, I lose it so quick. I have good metabolism, and in boxing you need so much energy. So
yeah. What books do you read?
Lately, I got into financial books. So I read. I just finished this. It's like this long book by Tony Robbins, Money Master Freedom. I read it in English to get my English like better, and it was so long and so complicated, all these financial terms in English. But yeah, that was the last book that I now finished. And yeah, my right now I'm reading 5 Steps Ahead from Patrick Bet-David. Like he has also a very, very good podcast. I recommend it if you want to watch it. Like
I don't know that. I don't know. You have to send it to me.
Great. He has all these athletes on his show, bodybuilders. He did actually, I think, the last great interview with Kobe Bryant, which was like very, very motivational. It's on YouTube. If you have time, look it up. I'll send you the link.
Very good. Patrick?
Bet-David. He's actually Armenian too.
Yeah. I know Pat. That's the guy. Pat David is the guy that did all the mafia.
Exactly.
Mafia party.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sandy
yes.
Bull,
like, yes. Yes.
He
yes.
He loves
yes,
all
yes.
these mobsters and athletes. I don't know. He's
it's a strange mix, but he's got it down.
but his podcast and it's so good. I actually, first time I saw him was after the Beatles fight in Germany, and I was watching this, it popped up on my YouTube, and I was like, look at it. And he had so inspirational things, which like also helped me after this previous thing. Yeah. And I was like, hey, all this information is out there for free on YouTube. Like, he has everything on business, on finances, on how to be this and that. And it's like so transparent politics, like you can find everything. Yeah. And then he has like really quality people on there, which is great to watch. And he now has, he came out with a book. It's called, as I said, 5 Steps Ahead. And I'm almost finished with that. But it's a very good book, good to read. And I'm on that right now.
Yeah, that's one thing I wanted to show you was, I'm going to butcher this. You know this guy.
Jackson Rishi Brief. Oh, no, that guy, I don't know. A Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu?
Yes.
It's so popular right now, right?
Rickson Gracie. It's an unbelievable story.
I heard the name.
Yeah.
I heard his name so many times. You know why? Because my coach got into jiu-jitsu so much that like he practices all the time. In the gym, we have also jiu-jitsu, and everybody's talking about jiu-jitsu. So I heard probably the name of him from them.
You absolutely have to read this. It's also talks about breathing. His story is amazing, but breathing, breath is like one of the most important things also in sports. To get back into the preparation also in boxing, in the ring, is there a certain breathing method that you have to use in order to stay alert all the time and not to get tired?
You need, especially if you are like athletic body type and you have many muscles, you always need much oxygen, right? And in boxing, it's like you're fighting somebody, so you could get knocked out in front of thousands of people, so you are always like a little bit nervous, and you already get a little bit tired by this by this tension, you know. And breathing, some I remember when I didn't have much experience, I would go into the fight and I would be training so good, but in the fight I wouldn't breathe. Like, was that like so? The tension was like so much that I was like breathing inside. Like, and then I remember one doctor I was working with, he showed me like I don't know how you call it, Zwerchfell in English. Like, you have to press it in and out, and like to get like all the bad air completely out, and then suck all fresh air deep in and out.
Diaphragm.
Like, very.
Diaphragm is called. Diaphragm.
It's called.
Yeah,
I remember when he was telling me about that, and I was like, oh, man, if I would breathe all the time like that when I'm also working out, you would get less tired. So it's very important.
It's essential, yeah. And a lot of athletes underestimate the importance of breathing. And I think that's just to raise awareness of breathing and breathing correctly, mm-hmm. deeply, diaphragm. It looks ugly when you blow out your stomach like this when you breathe, but it's much healthier when you breathe through your stomach and your diaphragm, because your stomach. Yeah. A lot of people are mouth breathers, so they breathe through the nose, and then that raises the stress level in your lungs. And there's a certain hormonal process that I cannot explain, but I know that definitely breathing through your stomach deeply is much more effective, and also calming your mind and meditation. It's like, I mean, it's everything. Mm. I fall asleep quicker like that, by the way, to get back on the sleep. I really? Fall asleep quicker breathing through my diaphragm slowly, deeply, and it's very, it's calming. It's very good. So
I'm still working on that, because my breathing is not on point yet. And if I fight, my nose on the left side gets always closed. I don't ever crack my nose probably. And I start to breathe with the mouth, but and you have also the mouth guard in your mouth. Yeah. So it's a little bit different feeling to breathe, but it's very, very important to get good breath.
So I have last three quick questions. Usually for basketball people, I do, let's call it ATOs, mm-hmm. after timeouts. It's just quick hitters. Yeah. But for you, I call it three quick hits below the belt.
Low balls, yeah.
Yeah, low, like right in the balls, right after to finish the fight, and the referee doesn't see it. So. I have just three quick questions to bother you, and we're gonna start with the most Armenian. I'm not gonna tell you anything.
I can't block them, or like
no, you can't block them. You have to absorb it. You have to absorb it.
Throw it on me.
So the first one, the most Armenian thing you still do today.
Tell everybody how great Armenians are. that's like people around me got always tired, even my girlfriend, because like Armenians are not so known like all over the world. Like sometimes in some parts of the world, you say you're Armenian, like, hey, where is Armenia? I don't know the country because it's so small, right?
Yeah.
And it's not like so well known. But there's so many Armenians, they did something to improve the world, like developing the ATM machine, or like MRT, or like the GNC, the store was actually founded by an Armenian. There's so many like things that I have made by Armenians. The best chess player, Garry Kasparov, is Armenian. So I keep telling always my friends and my circle, and everybody's like already tired. They're like, yeah, okay, like Armenians invented the world. And every Armenian does that. So it's the most
Armenian. And but many people wouldn't know that Armenians know what Armenians did, but many other people probably wouldn't know unless you...
It's not that common. That's why it's... Armenian population all over the world is just 10 million people.
Yeah.
And 1.5 are living in LA. So like, you don't hear so much about them. And I can't advertise with Kim Kardashian. Like, she's Armenian, but she's probably not the best role model to mention. So I always come up with somebody new. Like, boom. The other day, one of my friends in the gym, he came up. He's like, you know, Michael Francisi, this old mobster, one of the biggest earners during the mobster days. He's coming up with a wine brand. And he's like, my buddy's telling me, don't flip out that I'm telling you. But his partner is Armenian, and they're doing Armenian wine. I was like, oh.
they're everywhere. They're everywhere. One boxer you would want, if you could just pick one boxer that you would love to step in a ring with, who would it be?
To fight?
Yeah.
That's a tricky question.
Let's say dead or alive. Anybody who's maybe from the past that you admired and you always wanted to fight and to.
The thing is, yeah, but if I pick the fighters that I admire, they would knock me out and then that would be good.
That's the trick. That's the trick. Right. But it's a challenge. It's a challenge.
I think I would love to step in the ring with Roy Jones, because I always loved Roy Jones when I was growing up. And I think now he couldn't hurt me. So I was thinking he could still teach me because he has so much boxing knowledge and he was like probably the best fighter of the universe. And I can learn much of him. But at this point, he couldn't hurt me. So I would be safe.
Three things. This is the last one. I want three, because I heard you say one thing on one of the interviews you had, but I would like to know three things you would want to do after you finish your career that you are not allowed or you cannot do now.
I'm already, my girlfriend has me online for skydiving. Like I could do it now, but I think like I want to be like get my title world belt officially, and then I can like injure myself skiing.
No, skydiving.
So actually, yeah, we were supposed to go to Colorado for skiing now, but now I have my fight for February. So my girlfriend was still pushing for it. So I was like I never skied. What happens if I injure myself and then my whole career is all on the line?
Exactly. Yeah, you don't go skiing.
I'm already for skiing and skydiving.
And the third one, anything else that you felt like that you always will want to do after you finish?
After I finish my career, third. Well, yeah, I would probably live for a month or a few months in Asia and Thailand or something. Mm. I think I can do that also during my career. But that's a big thing I want to do.
Yeah. Bali. 1 month in Bali.
I was like 2 weeks in Bali. I loved it so much. And I'm sure I still think like maybe I would probably retire there after boxing. that's the thing that I had also on my mind.
It's one of the best surfing spots. That's one of the first time I went surfing, actually for Lee's wedding.
You surf?
On Bali. On Bali, Lee had his wedding there and we went to surf there. And that's the first time I stood up on the board and I was surfing. So I felt really cool on that day.
But you got into it? Like it's growing on you? It's a hobby now? Or?
I can't. I mean, it's not something you can do in Lithuania on a daily basis. I can surf in the snow. I can snowboard over here.
Snowboard, right? And my brother did surfing one time. He's like, hey, Noel, like he did it in England. And he was like, I didn't know that I would like it so much. But what if you catch the wave and you are on the wave and you're so smooth on the wave, it gets addicting. Like you want to have that feeling again when you're on the wave.
Yeah.
So I didn't do that yet. But I would like to try that. And yeah, I know Bali is a great spot for it, but I didn't try it out. I don't know why. I was just on my scooter all day and like eating and getting massages because they're so affordable. Yeah?
And cheap.
And I remember I actually had to travel to LA from Bali and I had a stop in Sydney for like 14 hours or something. And I wanted to stay for a few days to see Lee. But I was so afraid because I had to do my taxes. It was like already like April 15th is in the States, always the last day. And I didn't have no social security card. So I just traveled to LA to get my social security card. So I couldn't spend a few days in Australia.
Yeah, you better pay those taxes in the US.
everywhere, right?
In the US, the IRA will get you. That's there's no joke there. No joking around.
Well, in Florida, we have the advantage that we don't have no income tax. Like you pay federal tax.
Yeah.
That's like very, very nice if you compare it to Germany, for example, where half of your salary goes always to taxes. And they always keep finding something in the past that you have to pay. Germany, you know, which you don't know about. That will be probably also point by to Bali or something, like Asia, to have like a relaxed life. Latin America, Mexico, maybe.
Sunny. Where it's sunny.
Yeah.
All right, Noel, we did it. I appreciate your patience. I appreciate you taking my rookie questions that I'm
oh, they did. I was surprised about the questions. Like they're not rookie questions. Definitely some very interesting talking points we had. And I really enjoyed it. And thanks for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for coming on. It's been a pleasure. Pleasure has been mine. And I know once we get off, we're going to continue to talk German again and just talk about the podcast some more. Thanks again, Noel.
Thank you.